Chapter 54. General Webb wins the Battle of Winendal. By the besiegers and besieged of Lille, some of the most brilliant feats of valor were performed that ever illustrated any war. On the French side, whose gallantry was prodigious, the skill and bravery of Marshal Boufflers actually eclipsing those of his conqueror, the Prince of Savoy, may be mentioned that daring action of Messieurs de Luxembourg and Tournefort, who, with a body of horse and dragoons, carried powder into the town, of which the besieged were in extreme want, each soldier bringing a bag with 40 pounds of powder behind him, with which perilous provision they engaged our own horse, faced the fire of the foot brought out to meet them. And though half of the men were blown up in the dreadful errand they rode on, a part of them got into the town with the succors, of which the garrison was so much in want. A French officer, Monsieur Dubois, performed an act equally daring and perfectly successful. The Duke's great army lying at Elchin and covering the siege, and it being necessary for M. de Vendesme to get news of the condition of the place, Captain Dubois performed his famous exploit, not only passing through the lines of the siege, but swimming afterwards no less than 7 moats and ditches, and coming back the same way, swimming with his letters in his mouth. By these letters Monsieur de Boufflers said that he could undertake to hold the place till October, and that if one of the convoys of the Allies could be intercepted, they must raise the siege altogether. Such a convoy as hath been said was now prepared at Ostend, and about to march for the siege, and on the 27th September we and the French too had news that it was on its way. It was composed of 700 wagons, containing ammunition of all sorts, and was escorted out of Ostend by 2,000 infantry and 300 horse. At the same time M. de La Mothe quitted Bruges, having with him 35 battalions, and upwards of 60 squadrons and 40 guns, in pursuit of the convoy. Major General Webb had meanwhile made up a force of 20 battalions, and 3 squadrons of dragoons at Turout, whence he moved to cover the convoy and pursue La Mothe, with whose advanced guard ours came up upon the great plain of Turout, and before the little wood and castle of Winendal, behind which the convoy was marching. As soon as they came in sight of the enemy, our advanced troops were halted, with the wood behind them, and the rest of our force brought up as quickly as possible, our little body of horse being brought forward to the opening of the plain, as our general said, to amuse the enemy. When M. de La Mothe came up, he found us posted in 2 lines in front of the wood, and formed his own army in battle facing ours, in 8 lines, 4 of infantry in front, and dragoons and cavalry behind. The French began the action, as usual, with a cannonade which lasted 3 hours, when they made their attack, advancing in 8 lines, 4 of foot and 4 of horse, upon the Allied troops in the wood where we were posted. Their infantry behaved ill. They were ordered to charge with the bayonet, but, instead, began to fire, and almost at the very first discharge from our men, broke and fled. The cavalry behaved better, with these alone, who were 3 or 4 times as numerous as our whole force, Monsieur de La Mothe might have won victory. But only 2 of our battalions were shaken in the least, and these speedily rallied. Nor could the repeated attacks of the French horse cause our troops to budge an inch from the position in the wood in which our general had placed them. After attacking for 2 hours, the French retired at nightfall entirely foiled. With all the loss we had inflicted upon him, the enemy was still 3 times stronger than we, and it could not be supposed that our general could pursue M. de La Mothe, or do much more than hold our ground about the wood, from which the Frenchman had in vain attempted to dislodge us. La Mothe retired behind his 40 guns, his cavalry protecting them better than it had been enabled to annoy us, and meanwhile the convoy, which was of more importance than all our little force, and the safe passage of which we would have dropped to the last man to accomplish, marched away in perfect safety during the action, and joyfully reached the besieging camp before Lille. Major General Cadogan, my Lord Duke's quartermaster general, and between whom and Mr. Webb there was no love lost, accompanied the convoy, and joined Mr. Webb with a couple of hundred horse just as the battle was over, and the enemy in full retreat. He offered, readily enough, to charge with his horse upon the French as they fell back, but his force was too weak to inflict any damage upon them, and Mr. Webb, commanding as Cadogan Sr., thought enough was done in holding our ground before an enemy that might still have overwhelmed us had we engaged him in the open territory, and in securing the safe passage of the convoy. Accordingly, the horse brought up by Cadogan did not draw a sword, and only prevented, by the good countenance they showed, any disposition the French might have had to renew the attack on us. And no attack coming, at nightfall General Cadogan drew off with his squadron, being bound for headquarters, the two generals at parting grimly saluting each other. He will be at wrong time enough to lick my Lord Duke's trenchers at supper, says Mr. Webb. Our own men lay out in the woods of Winnendall that night, and our general had his supper in the little castle there. If I was Cadogan, I would have a peerage for this day's work, General Webb said. And, Harry, thou shouldst have a regiment. Thou hast been reported in the last two actions. Thou wert near killed in the first. I shall mention thee in my dispatch to His Grace the Commander-in-Chief, and recommend thee to poor Dick Harwood's vacant majority. Have you ever 100 guineas to give Cardonnel? Slip them into his hand tomorrow, when you go to headquarters with my report. In this report the Major General was good enough to mention Captain Esmond's name with particular favor, and that gentleman carried the dispatch to headquarters the next day, and was not a little pleased to bring back a letter by His Grace's secretary, addressed to Lieutenant General Webb. The Dutch officer dispatched by Count Nassau-Woudenborg, Field-Marischal Auverquerque's son, brought back also a complimentary letter to his commander, who had seconded Mr. Webb in the action with great valor and skill. Esmond, with a low bow and a smiling face, presented his dispatch, and saluted Mr. Webb as Lieutenant General, as he gave it in. The gentleman round about him, he was riding with his suite on the road to Menin as Esmond came up with him gave a cheer, and he thanked them, and opened the dispatch with rather a flushed, eager face. He slapped it down on his boot in a rage, after he had read it. 'Tis not even writ with his own hand. Read it out, Esmond. And Esmond read it out. Sir, Mr. Cadogan has just now come in, and has acquainted me with the success of the action you had yesterday in the afternoon against the body of troops commanded by M. de la Mothe, at Winnendall, which must be attributed chiefly to your good conduct and resolution. You may be sure I shall do you justice at home, and be glad on all occasions to own the service you have done in securing this convoy. Yours, and C. M. Two lines by that D.D. Cardonnel, and no more, for the taking of Lille for beating 5 times our number for an action as brilliant as the best he ever fought, says poor Mr. Webb. Lieutenant General, that's not his doing. I was the oldest Major General. By, I believe he had been better pleased if I had been beat. The letter to the Dutch officer was in French, and longer and more complimentary than that to Mr. Webb. And this is the man, he broke out, that's gorged with gold, that's covered with titles and honors, that we won for him, and that grudges even a line of praise to a comrade in arms. Hasn't he enough? Don't we fight, that he may roll in riches? Well, well, wait for the Gazette, gentlemen. The Queen and the country will do us justice, if His Grace denies it us. There were tears of rage in the brave warrior's eyes as he spoke, and he dashed them off his face onto his glove. He shook his fist in the air. H, by the Lord, says he, I know what I had rather have than a peerage. And what is that, sir? Some of them asked. I had rather have a quarter of an hour with John Churchill, on the fair green field, and only a pair of rapiers between my shirt and his, sir, interposes one. Tell him so. I know that's what you mean. I know every word goes to him, that's dropped from every general officer's mouth. I don't say he's not brave. Curse him. He's brave enough, but we'll wait for the Gazette, gentlemen. God save Her Majesty. She'll do us justice. The Gazette did not come to us till a month afterwards, when my general and his officers had the honor to dine with Prince Eugene and Lille, His Highness being good enough to say that we had brought the provisions and ought to share in the banquet. 'Twas a great banquet. His Grace of Marlborough was on His Highness's right, and on his left the Marechal de Boufflers, who had so bravely defended the place. The chief officers of either army were present, and you may be sure Esmond's general was splendid this day. His tall, noble person, and manly beauty of face, made him remarkable anywhere. He wore, for the first time, the star of the Order of Generosity that His Prussian Majesty had sent to him for his victory. His Highness the Prince of Savoy called a toast to the conqueror of Winendel. My Lord Duke drank it with rather a sickly smile. The aides-de-camp were present, and Harry Esmond and his dear young lord were together, as they always strove to be when duty would permit. They were over against the table where the generals were, and could see all that passed pretty well. Frank laughed at my Lord Duke's glum face. The affair of Winendel, and the Captain General's conduct to Webb, had been the talk of the whole army. When His Highness spoke, and gave evening word to Winendel, son army a sa victor, adding, Cui nos fond diner a lil adjured I, there was a great cheer through the hall, for Mr. Webb's bravery, generosity, and very weaknesses of character caused him to be beloved in the army. Like Hector, handsome, and like Paris, brave, whispers Frank Castlewood. Venus, an elderly Venus, couldn't refuse him a pippin. Stand up, Harry. See, we are drinking the army of Winendel. Ramillies is nothing to it. Huzzay! Huzzay! At this very time, and just after our general had made his acknowledgement, someone brought in an English Gazette, and was passing it from hand to hand down the table. Officers were eager enough to read it. Mothers and sisters at home must have sickened over it. There scarce came out a Gazette for 6 years that did not tell of some heroic death or some brilliant achievement. Here it is, action of Winendel, here you are, General, says Frank, seizing hold of the little dingy paper that soldiers love to read so, and, scrambling over from our bench, he went to where the General sat, who knew him, and had seen many a time at his table his laughing, handsome face, which everybody loved to saw. The generals in their great perukes made way for him. He handed the paper over General Dona's buff coat to our general on the opposite side. He came hobbling back, and blushing at his feet, colon, I thought he'd like it, Harry, the young fellow whispered. Idn't I like to read my name after Ramillies, in the London Gazette? Viscount Castlewood serving a volunteer, I say, what's yonder? Mr. Webb, reading the Gazette, looked very strange, slapped it down on the table, then sprang up in his place, and began to ill your highness please to, His Grace the Duke of Marlborough here jumped up to, hear some mistake, my dear General Webb. Your Grace had better rectify it, says Mr. Webb, holding out the letter, but he was five off His Grace the Prince Duke, who, besides, was higher than the general, being seated with the Prince of Savoy, the Electoral Prince of Hanover, and the envoys of Prussia and Denmark, under a baldaquin, and Webb could not reach him, tall as he was. Stay, says he, with a smile, as if catching at some idea, and then, with a perfect courtesy, drawing his sword, he ran the Gazette through with the point, and said, Permit me to hand it to your Grace. The Duke looked very black. Ake it, says he, to his master of the horse, who was waiting behind him. The Lieutenant General made a very low bow, and retired and finished his glass. The Gazette in which Mr. Cardonnel, the Duke's secretary, gave an account of the victory of Winendel, mentioned Mr. Webb's name, but gave the sole praise and conduct of the action to the Duke's favorite, Mr. Cadogan. There was no little talk and excitement occasioned by this strange behavior of General Webb, who had almost drawn a sword upon the commander-in-chief. But the general, after the first outbreak of his anger, mastered it outwardly altogether, and, by his subsequent behavior, had the satisfaction of even more angering the commander-in-chief than he could have done by any public exhibition of resentment. On returning to his quarters, and consulting with his chief advisor, Mr. Esmond, who was now entirely in the general's confidence, and treated by him as a friend, and almost a son, Mr. Webb writ a letter to His Grace the Commander-in-Chief, in which he said, "Your Grace must be aware that the sudden perusal of the London Gazette, in which Your Grace's secretary, Mr. Cardonnel, hath mentioned Major General Cadogan's name as the officer commanding in the late action of Winnendall, must have caused a feeling of anything but pleasure to the general who fought that action. Your Grace must be aware that Mr. Cadogan was not even present at the battle, though he arrived with squadrons of horse at its close, and put himself under the command of his superior officer. And as the result of the Battle of Winnendall, in which Lieutenant General Webb had the good fortune to command, was the capture of Lille, the relief of Brussels, then invested by the enemy under the Elector of Bavaria, the restoration of the great cities of Ghent and Bruges, of which the enemy by treason within the walls had got possession in the previous year, Mr. Webb cannot consent to forego the honors of such a success and service, for the benefit of Mr. Cadogan, or any other person. As soon as the military operations of the year are over, Lieutenant General Webb will request permission to leave the army, and return to his place in Parliament, where he gives notice to His Grace the Commander-in-Chief, that he shall lay his case before the House of Commons, the country, and Her Majesty the Queen. By his eagerness to rectify that false statement of the Gazette, which had been written by His Grace's secretary, Mr. Cardonnel, Mr. Webb, not being able to reach His Grace the Commander-in-Chief on account of the gentleman seated between them, placed the paper containing the false statement on his sword, so that it might more. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.